The following program sponsored by the Alliance for Recovery.
Welcome to Recovery Coast to Coast on 1590 KLIFE and broadcast nationally on the Internet in streaming audio at www.recoverycoasttocoast.org. 2 hours of interviews, features, and call-in questions and comments about this one-day-at-a-time adventure in personal recovery, as we share experience, strength, and hope with others so that they may recover from alcohol and other drug and behavioral addictions. And now, Recovery Coast to Coast is on the air. Here's your host, Neil Scott.
And welcome to Recovery Coast to Coast, live from the studios of KLIFE AM 1590 and broadcast nationally in streaming audio at recoverycoasttocoast.org. I'm Neil Scott, along with tonight Mr. Brian Apker, my co-host. We got a great show tonight. We've got Jody S. in the second hour, 16 years in recovery. We're going to talk to him about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Dick Van Dyke will be stopping by in hour number two as well with some words of wisdom. And in our first hour, we have a special guest, Christopher Kennedy Lawford. He is joining us this evening from Southern California. He is an actor, a writer, and a recovery activist. He's also the nephew of former President Kennedy, the son of actor Peter Lawford and Patricia Kennedy. He's lived a life, Brian, as many of the Kennedys seem to do, in the fast lane. And then 19 years ago, he entered into recovery and has been blessed ever since with the abundance that sobriety brings. Symptoms of Withdrawal is his first book. It's a book of snapshots and redemption. Chris takes the reader deep into one of the most amazing families of this or any generation, from the underbelly of Washington, D.C. to the high hills of Hollywood. He suffered through the pain of the assassinations of President Kennedy and his brother Bobby, the horror of his uncle Teddy's Chappaquiddick tragedy, and, of course, the death of his cousin David, who died of a drug overdose. He's living proof, Brian, that recovery is an American way of life. And just as his disease got progressively worse, his recovery gets progressively better. Chris, welcome to Recovery Coast to Coast.
Hey, Neil, it's good to be here.
Nice to have you here. Hey, Chris, with all the books written about the Kennedy family, why this book, why now?
Well, there are a lot of reasons I wrote this book. I'll tell you about, I've been sober 19 and a half years, and, as many people who have gone down this road will tell you, somewhere between 15 and 20 years, the onion gets peeled very quickly. And, I was confronted with what I would call a midlife opportunity, which was basically I got to look at a lot of things. I got to look at myself in a very specific way. And at that time, I got a phone call from a guy. People have been asking me to contribute to books and participate in books written about my family for years. And this guy called me up right in the middle of this thing, and he said, asked me if he was writing a book about the Kennedy men. And I asked him why in the world the world needed another book about the Kennedys. And he said that one of my cousins had this amazing story that needed to be told. And I said, well, the only reason that story needed to be told is if my cousin needed to tell it. And it got me thinking that maybe it was time for me to tell my own story. And so that was kind of the genesis of it.
Chris Kennedy Lawford is joining us. Let me give out the phone number. It is area code 206-374-8800. You can reach us in real time with email questions as well at recoverycoasttocoast@comcast.net. Again, recoverycoasttocoast@comcast.net. Phone number here in the studio, area code 206-374-8800. Chris Kennedy Lawford joining us. Chris, what was your family's reaction to this book?
Well, my family has had, 30 or 40 years of somewhat unpleasant and emotional experience when it comes to books being written about them. As many of your listeners will know, nobody in my family outside of my grandmother, Rose Kennedy, has written a book about their life. My grandmother, was an extraordinary woman who had an extraordinary life, and she wrote a book in 1974. And when I thought about writing this book, I wondered whether I really had the right to write a book about my life. Much of this book is about recovery, and that was a huge reason why I wrote it. My family, I wrote a letter when I decided to write this book to my Uncle Teddy, and I told him that I was writing this book because it turns out at the age of 48, I found out I'm a writer. I started writing these snapshots about 3 years ago, and it turns out, and I sent it to this agent, and it turns out I write fairly well, and they told me that I should write this book, and that it might be the beginning of a career. So I explained that to my uncle, and many in my family have cooperated with me. Many of the letters that are in the book were written to me by my parent, by my uncles and my aunts, and so they've been cooperative and supportive. I think initially there was a little trepidation on all their parts, but I think that the way the book's been received, both critically and in the culture, it's pleased them.
Chris, Brian Apker here. This was an outstanding book, by the way. I read it cover to cover, and I plan to read it again because there's so many good quotes in there. But what I want to know is, as you were putting the book together, reliving a lot of these memories, what emotions did you go through in writing this book?
It was a pretty and a cathartic and intense experience. Many people have said, as you know, Brian, having read the book, there's a lot of memory in this book, and you know, people wonder how you can remember all that stuff, and the truth is, you know, I'm trained as an actor. I went back and I wrote, and I relived a lot of this stuff sensorially. I mean, from being a kid on the beach in California to my summers in Hyannisport to some of my dark days on using drugs and alcohol, and it was amazing how I was transported back to those times, and much of that memory was in my, you know, in my subconscious and in my muscle memory, and just it was quite extraordinary what came out. It was one of the great experiences of my life, recalling my life, and it rooted me in a deep sense in who I am and the life that I've led. It was truly a remarkable experience, an experience that I would recommend to anybody, whether you publish it or not. It's really a remarkable thing to do.
Chris Kennedy Lawford joining us tonight on Recovery Coast to Coast. Phone number is 206-374-8800. Let's get the first phone call. Hello, Eric. You're on from Bothell. Good evening. You're on with Chris Kennedy Lawford.
Good evening. Thank you. Last week, we heard from the guest from Marin County about their efforts to watchdog the alcohol companies and how different faculties can stimulate addiction: society's norms, accessibility to drugs or alcohol, role modeling, and surrounding expectations. I was wondering that you grew up in a family that obviously had some of each of those from both sides of your family, from Hollywood to high society. Can you pinpoint what of those may have been factors to you or other members of your family that led to addictions?
Well, I'll tell you, I've thought about that, and you know, the beginning of my journey, I started using drugs when I was 13 years old, and the way I describe it is it was kind of an addictive perfect storm, if you will, in the sense that I think, number one, I have a genetic predisposition towards alcoholism and drug addiction. I think that that's, you know, I think that runs in my DNA. The other things that happened were, you know, the cultural conditions at those times. In 1969, the attitudes toward drugs and alcohol were far different than they are today. There was much more acceptance of experimentation, of actual drug usage, certainly in the communities I grew up in. People did not have an awareness of what the downside of all of this might be. There was far less information. So the ability to go down that road was easier. The third thing that happened was my own personal circumstances, which were, I was a product of divorce. I had witnessed the public murders, very public murders of two of my relatives. So to me, the world was a very scary place. It was a very painful place. I didn't really know that at the time because I had perfected this sort of manhole cover approach to any emotional feeling. But in truth, looking back, it was a very scary place, and I was looking for a way out. I found that way out in drugs and alcohol. But those three things, the genetic predisposition, the cultural mores at the time, and also my own personal experience in the world, were the three things that kind of led me down this road or facilitated me going down this road. And, obviously, I made the choice, too, to go down this road, but that's how it worked for me.
And in your recovery, as you got clean and sober, did it bring back some of those memories that you had buried from the addiction, from the drugs and alcohol, that the pain that you had essentially hidden away by using?
Well, what's interesting is, and anybody that's in recovery will tell you this. I mean, you know, I got sober at the age of 30, and I had the emotional and psychological and mental faculties of a 14-year-old. And, you know, to some extent, I've had to go through my adolescence in my 40s, which is not a pretty sight. So, you know, a lot of the stuff that you don't deal with comes back, and a lot of the stuff that, you have to learn a bunch of new behaviors. So, yes, in effect, the manhole cover that had been in place, I had perfected that, and I could continue that without the use of drugs, but eventually that whittles away, and you have to start experiencing life in an emotional way and in all kinds of ways. And quite frankly, I don't want anything else. You know, I recently went through a couple of years ago went through the Hep C protocol with interferon and ribavirin, and they suggested I take antidepressants, and I refused to take them primarily because I do not want anything to get in the way of my full experience of life, whatever it is, painful, joyful, whatever it is. I want to experience all of it.
Eric, thank you very much for the phone call. As we move right along, you mentioned you have the genetic predisposition, Chris. Was your dad an alcoholic?
I believe he was. You know, he died at 60 of a failed liver. He struggled with alcoholism and drug abuse for much of his later life. Tried to get sober, couldn't get sober. So, you know, I don't diagnose anybody, but I would say that my dad definitely had a problem with drugs and alcohol, yes.
A lot of people might say that was due to his environment. I mean, we didn't know a whole lot more about alcoholism back then, and running with the Rat Pack included a lot of things, and that was one of them.
Well, you know, my certainly there are certain environments that facilitate or encourage alcohol and drug abuse, and certainly that the movie business at that time did. Many, many people did it. Many people, got out of it too. My dad was not so fortunate. He actually did try to get sober a number of times, was unable to. I don't know why some people, you know, for instance, in my own experience, my cousin David died and I didn't. I don't know why some of us get sober and some of us don't. I think environment has something to do with it. I don't think it's the whole story, though.
All right, we're going to go to the phone lines again, head down to Santa Barbara, and Kay is on line one. Good evening, Kay. You're on with Chris Kennedy Lawford.
Hi, okay. Thanks a lot. It's a great program.
Thank you, Kay.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Kay.
The first caller.
Kay, if you would turn down your monitor so you can hear us on the phone, probably be a little bit easier for you.
Yeah, it is easier. Thank you.
Okay.
Chris?
Yep.
I'm just wondering if religion has played any part at all in your recovery.
Well, I'll tell you this. Spirituality has. I think that what happened with me when I got sober was I had a sort of a spiritual experience that many, many people have. Something happened. I tried to get sober for 9 years. I tried everything to get sober. I talk a lot about this in Symptoms of Withdrawal, that nothing worked. And something, I think what happened for me on February 17th, 1986 was a complete surrender, and what I became willing to do was believe that something greater than me could restore me to sanity and relieve this thing that had persecuted me for 17 years. I knew I was in trouble when I was 21, and it took me to, you know, I got sober when I was 30. So something happened in a very short period of time that I would call spiritual. It didn't have a lot to do with religion because I don't belong to an organized religion. I was brought up Catholic. After I got sober, I tried to find a spiritual community that I could, that I could learn more and spend more time with, you know, in some kind of spiritual practice. And I did find that. It was not an organized religion. It was an ashram, but that's another story. But I definitely, for me, this spiritual component is a huge part of my recovery.
That's a good answer. Let's see, what else did I want to ask you? Well, weren't you ill at the time that your recovery began? Weren't you ill at that time?
Well, no, you know, I was very, very, my bottom was pretty low, and I bounced along the bottom for quite a number of years, and there was a lot of illness in that. When I did get sober, I had, you know, I was not ill. I was, well, I was ill in a lot of ways, but I wasn't okay. Physically ill. And I was, you know, I was pretty healthy for somebody who had endured what I had endured.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Kay, very much for the phone call.
Okay.
All right, Brian?
Chris, do you think if you were not Peter Lawford's son or a Kennedy, you would have entered into recovery sooner?
Yeah, that's tough to say. You know, a lot of people are enabled for a lot of different ways. Some people are too smart to get sober. Some people are too good-looking to get sober. Some people are too rich to get sober. Some people are too, I don't know. You know, it's terminal uniqueness. Whatever separates you from your humility or from the rest of the people or from you turning your will and your life over the care of somebody greater or something greater than you can keep you from getting sober. My circumstances were my circumstances, but I know a lot of people who have, you know, different circumstances. They're not members of the Kennedy family or members of, you know, have a Hollywood connection or whatever, who have a difficult time getting sober, who never get sober. I mean, you guys know what the recovery rates are. I mean, they're not good. You know, it's tough for people to get sober. And people come from, this is an equal opportunity disease. People come from all sorts of different backgrounds, economic backgrounds, social backgrounds, ethnicities. It doesn't really matter. What is imperative is that your terminal uniqueness is shattered and you become willing to surrender and give up. And that's the key, I think. That was the key for me.
With that being said, I want to read a quote from your book to you and have you comment it, because it's very interesting to me and it really hit home with me. Alcoholism and drug addiction are progressive diseases. Those who suffer from it get worse, never better. Some get worse more quickly than others. My experience has shown me that a person's ability to withstand the inevitable, debilitating effects of drug addiction and alcoholism has to do with luck, their physical constitution, and genetics.
Right.
Is that the same in recovery as well?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, I think that's a really good question. I don't think so. What I meant when I wrote that paragraph was I was speaking about my cousin David. And, you know, David was much smaller than I was.
Mm-hmm.
Luck wasn't as good as mine. And, you know, he got some people are affected much, much more, especially physically and psychologically, greater than others, depending on your physical constitution, a lot of things. You know, so it's a good question. I don't think, I wouldn't make the correlation necessarily. I think many people recover in different ways. It doesn't, you know, my experience has shown me that many different people that are high bottom people who haven't had a lot to get sober and they get this new way of life and it's wonderful. And then there are people that bounce along the bottom forever but get sober. And then there are people that I don't think recovery has the same kinds of, same kinds of paths necessarily as one's active addiction.
Mm-hmm. Chris Kennedy Lawford is joining us tonight. The Symptoms of Withdrawal, the name of the book. It is available at the 12-Step Bookshop. What impact, Chris, did David's death have on you and your using?
Well, initially, it had, you know, the effect of, like, one of us had died. You know, I mean, this was the thing. I think most alcoholics and addicts have this attitude that we're invincible somehow, even when it's clear we're not. even after we've passed from that place of where it's fun and we're indestructible, and bad stuff starts to happen, we never really believe that we're going to end up the way we end up, either dead or in jail or in some institution somewhere. And David's death was kind of a wake-up call for me on a lot of levels, but it was also, it was not a time when I thought, you know, I remember when he died, I was confronted with the possibility when another family member was sober, and he called me up and said, you know, we got to get through this thing sober. And I said, well, you do it your way, man, and I'll do it mine. Because I was not at any, you know, I was really mad. I was mad that David was gone. I felt that he sort of, you know, left me in this place to deal with, you know. And again, on some weird kind of way, David was always worse off than me. So I always felt a little bit better about myself thinking about David, you know. So there was a lot going on for me, and it took me a year and a half to get sober. I really strongly believe today that his death had a much more profound effect on me than I knew at the time.
You talked about the predisposition. How concerned are you about your own three kids?
I'm not really concerned, because, you know, people ask me this. I don't regret my disease at all. I don't regret being an alcoholic or an addict. I think it's one of the greatest gifts I have, actually. And now, you know, I say that having turned my greatest defect into my greatest asset. My life today, and my life for the last 20 years, has been remarkable, and it's been remarkable because of the journey that I took, the dark journey that I took. You know, I wouldn't wish this on my kids. I hope they don't have to endure it, but if they do, they will know where to go. They can come to me, and that's one good thing. And then they have their own path. You know, when my first son David was born, a spiritual mentor I had said to me, because I was terrified of being a father. I didn't think I knew how to do it. And I was, and he said, just remember something. Your kids have their own God and their own path. And I really, really believe that. And I try not to, interfere. I've talked to all my kids about where they come from. I've talked to them about their grandfather. I've talked to them about me. I've written this book about my journey. So they know where they come from. And if they choose to go down that road, that's their choice.
Chris Kennedy Lawford joining us tonight. His dark journey into drugs, his bright road to recovery, symptoms of withdrawal, a memoir of snapshots and redemption. It is available at the 12-Step Bookshop. Our phone number is area code 206-374-8800 if you'd like to hop on the lines with Chris. Or if you have an email question, we can do that in real time at recoverycoasttocoast@comcast.net. We're going to take a short time out. We will come back on the other side with Christopher Kennedy Lawford. This is Recovery Coast to Coast, the only program in America on the air 5 nights a week, 2 hours a night, talking about addiction with a focus on recovery. Neil Scott along with Brian Acker here till midnight tonight, and Jody S. joining us in hour number two. We'll be right back. The Java Zone, Seattle's most popular clean and sober coffee shop, now featuring great lattes, smoothies, chai, tea, Italian sodas, and more. Plus an array of fresh sandwiches made to order. It's a gathering place for people in recovery, where you can listen to music, play pool, or challenge the original Pac-Man. Java Zone conveniently located at 7811 Aurora North, not far from the Fremont Fellowship. Make the Java Zone your recovery zone. It's open until 8 most nights and until 10 Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
Teenage alcoholism. It sounds scary to a dad, especially if you believe your son or daughter has the problem. Chemical dependency is a serious problem, but there is hope and help if you call Sundown M Ranch. Sundown has a treatment program designed especially for young people. Teen alcoholism and drug addiction can be treated successfully. At Sundown M Ranch, it happens every day. Call 457-0990, 457-0990.
Recovery Coast to Coast is a program feature of the nonprofit Alliance for Recovery. Recovery Coast to Coast is on the air thanks to the generosity of our friends and listeners. Now, if you're enjoying Recovery Coast to Coast and would like to help us to continue to carry the message of hope and the promise of recovery, you can make a tax-deductible contribution to the Alliance for Recovery at P.O. Box 31451, Seattle, Washington, 98103. Or you can donate through PayPal at www.recoverycoasttocoast.org. Thank you in advance for your support.
Recovery Coast to Coast is not affiliated with Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, ACOA, or any other 12-step or similar program. We do attempt to observe the traditions and intent of these organizations, respecting their success and longevity. Recovery Coast to Coast endeavors to protect the personal anonymity of our callers, especially insofar as their involvement in any 12-step program is concerned.
All right, we are back on Recovery Coast to Coast, visiting tonight with Chris Lawford. He writes of his heartwarming respect and devotion to his family while detailing his own feeling of being the outside insider. It's a marvelous, marvelous book. Highly recommend it. It is available at the 12-step bookshop. You knew you had a problem early on, but you didn't get into recovery for, like, probably another 5 years. How bad did it get for you, Chris?
Oh, it got... It got bad, Neil. It was, I remember I was 21. I was at Georgetown University, and I'd gone there to become an American Studies major and study, you know, American history and literature. And I moved in next door to a commune of drug addicts, basically, and that plan went out the window. And one day I woke up, and I write about this in Symptoms of Withdrawal. I had I had the physical allergy. I had that thing that many drug addicts and alcoholics wake up with one day where they realize, they no longer have a choice. And, you know, I describe, addiction as similar to dancing with an 800-pound gorilla. You keep dancing until the gorilla stops dancing. And at 21, I woke up, and that gorilla, you know, went into full Macarena. It was for 9 years, I was dancing with a gorilla that was punching me in the face. I mean, it was full of, you know, the same story that all of us have. It, you know, arrests and, you know, overdoses and jails and rehabs and all of that kind of stuff for 8 or 9 years.
Until you get sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Pretty much. It's a mystery why some of us get sick and tired of being sick and tired and make that change. What happens? I think it's grace. I can't describe it. There are many, many people who are more deserving than I am, and that, you know, that didn't get it, and that wanted it just as badly as I did. And they don't get it. And I don't understand why some of us get it and some of us don't. I know one thing. It is an enormous gift. And it's a gift that I treasure every single day and never want to take for granted, because, I've seen people who do, and, it's, you know, there's nothing out there for me anymore. And I don't want to have to ask for this gift again.
Phone number is 206-374-8800, and you can reach us directly in real time in email at recoverycoasttocoast@comcast.net. The emails are starting to roll in. Jerry down in Atlanta just wrote in and said, there's an incident in your book about your dad giving a joint with PCP in it to Johnny Carson by mistake, and that Johnny threatened to jump off a building?
Yeah, well, that was, you know, it was a different time. My dad... It was an honest mistake, and that my dad, you know, used to sub for Johnny on the Tonight Show, and that kind of ended that whole deal.
Did you party and do drugs with your dad?
I did.
Was that weird?
Well, you know, as I said, it was a different time. This was Hollywood, and many, many people were, you know, doing this kind of thing intergenerationally. My dad, you know, my dad was a wonderful, wonderful guy who had no idea how to be a father, and he tried to be my friend, and I was, you know, 20 years old, and we were living in a time where this kind of, as I said, this kind of experimentation and behavior was not frowned on at all. As a matter of fact, it was widely accepted in this community, and so, you know, he thought we were sort of bonding on some level, and to some degree we were. It was completely inappropriate, and it was meaningless on a lot of levels. However, it was the best that my father could do. And, you know, I write about this in my book, Symptoms of Withdrawal, to illustrate how far I've come, you know, where I've come from as a father. I don't do that with my kids. Last year I took my son and his girlfriend to Spain. We did a political documentary on the Democratic and Republican conventions. I spent 4 days with him at the University of Pennsylvania getting him acclimated to that university. My dad never did that kind of stuff with me. He didn't not do it because he didn't love me. He didn't do it because he wasn't capable of doing it. I'm capable of doing it because I'm sober. That's the only reason I can do it. And I love my father because my father died at this too, and my father's death had a large part in me getting sober. So I love my father for what I'm able to do today.
You say in your book, some alcoholics have a bad childhood, but most of us have long ones. Is that similar to what you're talking about with your dad?
No, I wasn't thinking about, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of actors never grow up. I think that's part of their charm and it's part of their art, actually. You know, I know a lot of actors not to behave that way. I think that, you know, there is an aspect of that in Hollywood. But that saying, along with many, many other sayings, were, you know, things that I was talking about with me, because I had a very long childhood.
Fran down in Ventura wants to know, without mentioning names, how many other members of your family are in recovery, and are you doing any book signings in the L.A. area?
I've already done a bunch of book signings in the L.A. area, and I really don't talk about any of my other family members in terms of their recovery or they're not, you know, they're not. I mean, I don't, there are members of my family who are sober, though.
Jill in Chicago asks about alcohol. She says you talk about a lot about the other drugs, but you don't mention alcohol all that much. How did that figure into your life?
Well, you know, I think about this in terms of, I mean, I think all alcoholics and addicts are running away from something. We just use different color sneakers. I heard somebody say that once, and I think it's true. It didn't really matter what I took. I liked opiates. I liked painkillers. I was trying to kill the pain. But if I didn't have heroin or I didn't have pills, I would use Johnny Walker Black. It didn't really matter, you know, what it was. Some things I liked better than others, but I would certainly use alcohol if I didn't have anything else. And alcohol was always in the mix. It was, you know, it was always a part of the deal. And I'm certain that, like many drug addicts who sort of had their fill of drugs, they end up going to alcohol. And alcohol, to a large extent, is much more debilitating than some of the other drugs. I was treated by a therapist early on who said to me that if I had drunk alcohol the way I did heroin, I would be a wet brain. And so I don't really make that much of a distinction between these things. I can use anything addictively and have.
Chris, what was your first step to recovery?
My first step was, not that it did me a lot of good, was just an acknowledgement that I had a problem. I think that was the first step. And then I got a lot of information, none of which did me, well, I can't say that it didn't do me any good. I went to therapy for 9 years. I didn't get sober. But maybe all of that kept me alive, or maybe it got me to that place of surrender I had to get to. I don't know. Knowing about alcoholism and knowing about your problem doesn't necessarily do you a lot of good until you're willing to change behavior. And that will only come from a moment of grace, in my experience, because I was a very stubborn alcoholic, you know. A moment of grace that makes you sort of give up.
Marilyn down in Phoenix just writes, she says, is it true that your Aunt Joan helped you find a program of recovery, and how is her health? I heard she now has breast cancer.
I heard that too, and I haven't talked to Joan. I sent her a book. Joan actually was the person who brought me to recovery. She saved my life, and I'll be forever in her debt for that. I love her. She's a wonderful person who has had her struggles, and I just wish her all the best.
Francine in Oklahoma City wants to know if you ever have the urge to use or drink.
No, you know, I have to tell you that I had that obsession every single day for, well, I mean, probably from the moment I used, which was when I was 13, but certainly for the last 9 years. I mean, I had a daily obsession to use drugs and alcohol, and could not do it unless I was, you know, locked up somewhere. And for 19 and a half years now, I have not had that obsession. That obsession was removed. It was removed within the first 60 days. I consider that that absolutely a miracle. It had nothing to do with me. It was lifted from me, and it hasn't come back. And I'm enormously grateful for that.
We're going to take another time out. We'll come back on the other side with more of Chris Kennedy Lawford. The book is Symptoms of Withdrawal, a memoir of snapshots and redemption. You're on Recovery Coast to Coast. I'm Neil Scott. He's Brian Apker. Jody S. is going to be joining us in hour number two tonight, talking about what it was like for him, what happened, and what it's like now. Recovery Coast to Coast, every night, Monday through Friday, 10 to midnight, right here at K-Life and in streaming audio nationwide.
Pink Cloud getting on your nerves? The 12-step shop in Seattle has books, coins, CDs, and everything you need to put recovery in perspective. And about that Pink Cloud, we've got a great fourth-step guide we highly recommend. The 12-step shop, 63rd and Finney in Seattle. We'll be waiting for you. Believe me, you'll wind up here eventually.
It is advised that you work steps 1 through 3 with a sponsor before attempting a 4-step. Side effects may include serenity, prosperity, community, and blinding flashes of happiness.
Visit our website at 12stepshop.com. That's TWELVESTEPSHOP.com.
Shamrock Outpatient Treatment Center has been serving the Puget Sound area since 1984. Shamrock advocates progressive treatment with a non-judgmental and non-threatening approach. Clients are treated with kindness, with dignity, and with respect. The counselors will interact with the judges, attorneys, and probation officers so the client can focus on treatment. Shamrock also has programs for women and programs for children in the community. Call Shamrock today, 206-789-4784. Recovery Coast to Coast is a program feature of the nonprofit Alliance for Recovery. Recovery Coast to Coast is on the air thanks to the generosity of our friends and listeners. Now, if you're enjoying Recovery Coast to Coast and would like to help us to continue to carry the message of hope and the promise of recovery, you can make a tax-deductible contribution to the Alliance for Recovery at P.O. Box 31451, Seattle, Washington 98103. Or you can donate through PayPal at www.recoverycoasttocoast.org. Thank you in advance for your support. And we welcome you back to Recovery Coast to Coast, 206-374-8800, or you can reach us in real time at recoverycoasttocoast@comcast.net. From the book Symptoms of Withdrawal, my story is one of survival and claiming myself in the face of overwhelming ego and circumstance. I was given what everybody wants at birth and the goodwill of most everyone on the planet. I was also given a good dose of alcoholism and the massive dysfunction that exists in a family dynamic where alcoholism just doesn't run, it gallops. I'm Irish, and I've heard it said that God invented alcohol to keep the Irish from ruling the world. My family almost proved him wrong. Chris Kennedy Lawford is with us. The book is called Symptoms of Withdrawal, and we can take your email questions or we can take your phone calls. Brian?
Chris, talk to the folks out there who come from backgrounds universes away from yours, who are trying to understand how someone who seemingly has everything anyone can want can get involved in drugs and alcohol.
Well, you know, I mean, nobody gets involved with drugs and alcohol as a substitute for what they think they want in the world. You know, the getting of money, property, and prestige is not, you know, is not what's at stake here. I mean, plenty of people, as I said before, this is a disease that crosses all lines. It's completely democratic. You know, it's not like I know plenty of people. No, nobody I know is rich enough. Nobody I know is powerful enough. Nobody I know has enough sex, enough food. I mean, if you have this propensity to be addicted or to be an alcoholic or a drug addict, there's nothing of any of that stuff that's going to satisfy you. So getting it isn't going to change the fact that you're going to be an alcoholic or a drug addict. It's not the circumstances. These things have to do with what we don't have inside of us or what we were given through our DNA. And if we're unlucky enough to take a drink of alcohol or a drug and it sets that thing off. My experience has taught me that there's plenty of people in recovery who come from all sorts of different things. People who have everything that you think you could possibly want, and it's never enough, and it doesn't bring them any kind of happiness, so they search elsewhere.
Trying to keep the topic onto recovery, but an interesting email just came in from Sandy in Boise. She said, is it true that you were cast as Sarah Jessica Parker's love interest in Sex and the City?
Well, actually, what happened was that I wrote about that in my book, which was the only job I was ever fired from. I was cast in the pilot of Sex and the City, and I was actually the guy that in the beginning of the show is on a date with Sarah Jessica Parker's character, and we go home and we make love and we do all that kind of stuff, and then I dump her, and that was my character. And after the read-through, the producer called me up and he said, Chris, you're not going to be doing the role. And I said, well, why not? And they said, well, it would be believable that you might actually dump her, and we need to get a guy that it wouldn't be believable. It was the only job that I actually was fired from as an actor. So I wrote about that. It was kind of a funny.
What are you doing now acting-wise, Chris?
I have a movie coming out in December with Anthony Hopkins called The World's Fastest Indian. It's about this guy from New Zealand who drives his Indian motorcycle 200 miles an hour on the Bonneville Salt Flats in Utah in 1967. And it's a wonderful story about realizing your dreams, and it's a fantastic film, and Anthony Hopkins is brilliant in it, and they're already talking about an Academy Award for him. So it'll be out in January all over the country, I hope.
And nice to be working with people who are supportive of recovery, I might add.
Well, he's an amazing actor. He's an amazing human being. And you play tennis with good tennis players, your tennis gets better. It's the same thing in acting.
What about politics? Any interest?
Well, I never know. I mean, I have a strong political interest. I have strong political beliefs. I'm not happy with the way things are going in this country. I'm not very patient, and I don't compromise very well. So that sort of does not bode well for Democratic politics, but you never know. Maybe I'll run for governor somewhere, if I can find a really liberal state.
You are very public about your recovery, Chris. How has that changed your life? I mean, do people seek you out now for advice and counsel?
No, the recovery community is a pretty, I'll tell this story. Up until about a year and a half ago, I was very private about my recovery. And when I realized I was going to write this book, I thought that I should, I should take some more of these kinds of things that people come and ask me to speak publicly. And I went up to Indianapolis, and they asked me if I would do some press. And I went into this TV station, and this woman put a microphone in my face at 6 o'clock in the morning, and she said, "So, what's it like being a heroin addict?" And I thought, oh, my God, a terrible mistake. And I went to a radio show later after that, and I was kind of thinking, how am I going to get out of this? I don't want to be public about this. This is a big mistake. And I was talking to these DJs, and we were doing the show, and it was going a little bit better, but I was still terrified. I was looking out at this big picture window out on the square in Indianapolis, and this guy came up to it, and he was obviously homeless. He was African American. He was about 55, and he put a sign on the window that said, "Can you help me get sober?" And in that moment, I realized that I was doing exactly the right thing, that somehow that I would be used for good in some way. I don't know how. I think this, you know, recovery is, you know, this is the number one health issue facing the United States. It's the number one domestic violence issue. It's the number one incarceration issue. It is a huge issue, that does not get the funding that it needs and is still stigmatized. People like me, my cousin Patrick Kennedy does really good work in Washington. He has the parity bill. He's trying to get the insurance companies to reimburse for mental illness and addiction at the same rates they reimburse for other chronic illnesses, which they do not do now. And so I think that on a public policy level and that there is work for me to do here. I'm not sure how it's going to play out, but I'm really eager to be involved.
Chris, I've talked to a lot of people in recovery, and one of the common things amongst them was they said that they found out who their friends really were at that time. And I can imagine in the environment and the time that you grew up, did you find that there were people that were abandoning you at that time, or did you? How did that work for you?
I don't think I understand the question in terms of...
Well, did you find out that people in your life were in there because maybe of your money or because you could get them drugs, not because they liked Christopher Lawford, but because of what you had to offer them?
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, that's sort of the way the world works. I mean, everybody has ulterior motives, and most people do. Most people are thinking about other things than necessarily thinking about themselves. I mean, that's human nature to some degree. In recovery, I found just the opposite to be true. I found people that will crawl on their belly over broken glass for somebody if they need them. And that's an amazing thing. I've never found the kind of unconditional love that I found from people who are sober, who are willing to help other people that are sober. It's really quite a remarkable, rare thing.
We're going to take one more time out. We will come back and wrap things up with Chris Lawford. The book is Symptoms of Withdrawal, Christopher Kennedy Lawford, a memoir of snapshots and redemption. And we remind you that if you or someone you know has a problem with alcohol or any other drug, call the 24-hour alcohol drug helpline. The number is 206-722-3700. Neil Scott along with Brian Ackert on midnight tonight. Jody S. will be joining us in the second hour. We're going to take another break and back on the other side. Stay with us. The Java Zone, Seattle's most popular clean and sober coffee shop, now featuring great lattes, smoothies, chai, tea, Italian sodas, and more. Plus an array of fresh sandwiches made to order. It's a gathering place for people in recovery, where you can listen to music, play pool, or challenge the original Pac-Man. Java Zone, conveniently located at 7811 Aurora North, not far from the Fremont Fellowship. Make the Java Zone your recovery zone. It's open until 8 most nights and until 10 Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
Teenage alcoholism. It sounds scary to a dad, especially if you believe your son or daughter has the problem. Chemical dependency is a serious problem, but there is hope and help if you call Sundown M Ranch. Sundown has a treatment program designed especially for young people. Teen alcoholism and drug addiction can be treated successfully. At Sundown M Ranch, it happens every day. Call 457-0990, 457-0990.
It is Recovery Coast to Coast, the only program in America on the air 5 nights a week, 2 hours a night talking about addiction with a focus on recovery. Talking tonight to Chris Lawford, it's the first account in 35 years written by a Kennedy about being a Kennedy to speak honestly. And it's a marvelous book. This must have been very cathartic for you.
Yeah, it was a really, it was an amazing experience to do it. It was terrifying on a lot of levels, you know, it was not an easy thing to decide to do, and it was a difficult line to walk. You know, I come from, you know, people that pick this book up will pick it up for a variety of reasons. People that are interested in the Kennedy family, that are interested in the Rat Pack, that are interested in recovery and addiction, and or interested just in the human struggle of trying to find yourself. But the truth is, this is my story, and I think I kept the focus squarely on me. And that was a really, you know, and people say, look, it's a brutally honest book. But as you guys know, and as your listeners know, there's only when you're sober, there's only one way to live, and that is honestly as you can. Now, you know, I've been sober 19 and a half years, and as we all know, we peel the onion. It takes a while to get honest, and it took me a while, but this is an honest book, and it was very cathartic.
Jack in Montpelier, Vermont writes and wants to know what your favorite memory was of President Kennedy.
Well, my Uncle Jack was obviously an extraordinary guy, and the kids loved him. I write about the time in 1960, the Democrats had their convention in California, in Los Angeles, and my mom was a delegate, and she and my father did a lot of work with Frank Sinatra and to raise money and awareness for Jack Kennedy, and we all went to the sports arena in Los Angeles, and I was 5 years old, and for a kid to go to this convention, it was just so incredible to me, the energy and the people and the balloons and the signs, and you know, of course, at 11 o'clock I got tired, so they brought me back to my uncle's hotel room, and they put me in his bed, and they went back to the convention. And later that night, probably 2 or 3 in the morning, my Uncle Jack and my mom came in and woke me up, and my uncle looked at me and he said, "Christopher, I was nominated to be the Democratic candidate for president. I'm going to be running for president. Will you help me?" And I looked up at him and I said, "Well, that's great, Uncle Jack, but I'm kind of tired now. Can we do it tomorrow?" So, that was a pretty good memory.
Another quote from your book that I absolutely loved. "I hated Sunday. It was the seventh day, the day of rest. All the liquor stores were closed. It was the day when those I ran with were recovering. As far as I was concerned, recovering was for wimps and amateurs. I would stop running when I was dead. Then I'd have plenty of time for recovering." How do you feel about Sundays now?
I kind of like them. I'm still getting the hang of relaxing, though, I got to tell you. You know, I still run hard, and it's hard for me to relax, you know. But I like them a lot better. I watch football, and I live near the beach, so I actually am able to enjoy that day pretty much now.
Jerry in Montana wants to know what the story is about the junkie snatchers.
The junkie snatchers. I wonder what he's talking about.
Well, there's a part in your book where I think it was right around the time, if I'm not mistaken, where you lost your virginity in New York in a party.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right.
I think that's what he's talking about.
Okay, good. My cousin David and I, we were about 15 or 16 at the time. We were in Manhattan, and my mom had vacated her Fifth Avenue apartment to go to Paris, and my cousin David and I sort of took up residence there with our sleeping bags, and we would go down to Grand Central Station and Panhandle and go out to Central Park and hang out with all the drug addicts at Dope Hill. And one day we got this brilliant idea that we would invite all the girls there to a party at my mom's house, abandoned Fifth Avenue apartment. And then, you know, it would just be me and him and our friend and all these girls. Of course, all the girls brought their junkie boyfriends, and they ended up spending the whole night there and basically taking everything that wasn't nailed down.
Chris, what does recovery mean to you today?
Well, it means a lot of things. It means living a conscious life. It means the ability to make choices about who I am and what I want to do in my life. It means having a way of life, which is basically, I mean, as most of us know, the tenets for recovery in my world are love and service. Now, you know, I practice those two things imperfectly, but I believe in them as ethics and as a way to live. It means having a conscious contact with a power greater than me, which takes a lot of the pressure off. It means knowing that I've had my worst day. It means being able to realize my dreams. It means being able to reinvent myself, to know that I can, you know, I mean, I do things that other people, normal people, think are, you know, enormously courageous, you know, changing careers and doing things. And I, you know, to me, or to anybody who's had the kind of life that some of us have had, the struggles and you know, the near death stuff and all that kind of stuff, it's like, this is gravy. You know, this is really just a gift. I mean, the last 19 and a half years, I shouldn't be here. And, And so that's it's a pretty remarkable thing, recovery.
And just as the disease gets progressive in a destructive way, recovery is progressive in a positive way.
Yeah, no, there's no question about that. I think that it's also, you know, it's challenging in a lot of ways. I mean, it really challenges us, all of us, to, you know, to maintain a vigilance, obviously, not to, you know, in terms of whatever program we're working, but also to not just become complacent about who we are, or what we accept, but to really challenge ourselves to truly be who we are and to truly realize ourselves in all of our potential. And that's been my experience.
What do you say to someone out there who's struggling, who says, you know, I've tried it and it doesn't work and I don't know what to do?
Well, you know, look, recovery, in my estimation, is about attraction, not promotion. If you're the kind of drug addict or alcoholic that I was, you got to really want this in order to have a chance at it. So if you're not sure, then maybe you got more experimentation to do.
Chris, I appreciate you taking time to join us tonight. We are out of time. The book is Symptoms of Withdrawal. It's available at fine bookstores everywhere. Thank you.
Thanks, Neil. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Chris.